This is KUNV 91.5, and you're listening to Neon Eden. I'm your host, J. Patrick Kulikin. You can read my columns in the Las Vegas Sun and Las Vegas Weekly. My co-host, as always, Tovin Lapan, my colleague, a reporter at the Las Vegas Sun. Last week, more than 1,000 members of churches, synagogues, temples, nonprofit groups, and schools came together at UNLV for the first public meeting of Nevadans for the Common Good, a group dedicated to tackling some of the Valley's most persistent social problems. For a community not known for civic activism, it was, from my perspective, a fairly astounding event. Joining Tovin and I to talk about it is Charles Redman of University United Methodist Church. He's one of the people who helped bring all this about. He retired to Las Vegas 10 years ago, and we thank him for being here.
Thank you.
So tell us, I know you have social justice and social activism kind of deep inside in your blood. This goes back to your childhood. Tell us about your background a little bit.
Yeah, that's correct. It started with me as a kid back in the early 50s, as a matter of fact, when the town that I lived in was not... The African-American community was not allowed to use the swimming pool that had just recently been built. It's a brand-new, Olympic-sized, 50-meter swimming pool. And the parents of the African-American community got together to fight the issue because we were taxpayers, and our tax money was being used to support that project. The parents retained a lawyer, took it to court, and over about a two-year period, in and out of courts and so forth, the decision was rendered that the pool would be desegregated. And that was a big step. It was a memorable situation for me as a kid, being able to go to a big swimming pool during the summers. The hot summers in St. Louis are muggy and actually worse than Las Vegas when you put the humidity with it.
Yeah.
So that was a big deal, but it was a lesson.
How old were you at the time?
Well, I was about 9 years old at the time. And
that must have had a deep impact.
It had a deep impact on the whole community. Uh-huh. All of my friends, we were elated to be able to go to the swimming pool because mm-hmm. other than that, we were swimming in either the local creek mm-hmm. or we were going to a little wading pool about 25 feet in diameter. Mm-hmm. So this was a big deal for us, and it's a story that and a lesson that I never forgot. And it's one that has followed me throughout my life in terms of all the cities that I've lived in mm-hmm. because I've tried to be community conscious in those cities that I've lived in when issues come up mm-hmm. that affect people.
You had a career in human resources, and then you come to Las Vegas. And what was your experience of community activism once you got here about a decade ago?
Well, when I first got here, the one thing that I did notice was that there wasn't a real concerted effort that I could see where organizations were coming together to address issues. I came to learn that there are a number of institutions here, nonprofits and so forth, that do a lot of very good work, but they tend to focus on their issue and stay within their area of focus. And when the opportunity came 3 years ago to get involved and to be a part of an organization that was going to look at really bringing people together, bringing organizations together, that was of interest to me because I thought that was the missing link in terms of what was going on here. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, before we get into the details, you know, let's get the big picture. You know, what are you hoping to accomplish with this group?
What I'm hoping to accomplish, and I think I can say this for the Nevadans for the Common Good as a whole, that we will continue to bring members of the interfaith community together to begin to address some real serious issues going on in the Valley. And those issues were spelled out in terms of our primary areas of focus. I realize that the Nevadans for the Common Good, once that organization is totally put in place, they will decide which issues and which directions and so forth. But the building of relationships, the getting of churches involved, will be a continuing of the thing that we started to do 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. So that will go on, and that's what's of interest to me. And I'm hopeful that that would turn into be a groundbreaking and shaking involvement as it pertains to, again, the issues facing people in the Valley. Mm-hmm.
Now, you mentioned you folks have been working on this for 3 years. That's a long time.
Yeah.
And I know getting people, especially of different persuasions together, can be difficult. First, let me ask you, what sparked people to get started on it 3 years ago? Was it the recession and really crumbling of neighborhoods and so forth?
When I first had my interview with an individual that was invited here, this is Frank Pearson. You saw him the other night at the convention. He was invited here by Art Gathke, who was a part of that program. Father Bob Stokic was a part of that. Bishop Edwards was also a part of that. And considering what was going on at the time, late 2008, and the issues facing citizens in the Valley, it was believed that we needed to start a movement that could help persons begin to address some of these concerns. At the time, it was a lot of focus was on health care and how persons were being affected by the lack of health care. And the foreclosure issue was starting to really take off.
Uh-huh.
And it was
people
beginning,
losing their jobs, losing their homes.
Our first town hall meeting in 2009, we had about 150 people came to a session over at University Church. And we listened to the stories. And we found that people were not able to find jobs, just graduating from college, UNLV. We found that families were having to come back together and live under one roof because of the foreclosure problem, because of being laid off and so forth. We found that individuals who were senior citizens and how they were being impacted to the point that people were telling us in the stories, I'm trying to make a decision as to whether I buy food or do I buy drugs.
Mm-hmm.
This is what was coming out of the town hall meetings, and it was those kinds of issues that led us to know that more needs to be done in Las Vegas to help people through these tough times.
Okay, so let me ask you then. So you knew these problems were gathering momentum, and something had to be done. What happened in the intervening 3 years? It was just it took a while to get organized.
Well, the big thing, and this is part of the philosophy of the Industrial Areas Foundation, which we're part of, and that is you build relationships. And we have a saying, power before program, meaning that you must build relationships. You can't just go out and say, we're here, we're going to do this, and people not know who you are.
Yeah.
So building relationships, talking with various groups, talking with leaders, meeting with them, sitting down, talking with them is crucial, because that way you dispel any notions of myth, beliefs that people might have when you talk about community organizing, and people understand what you're about, why you are here, and what it is you're trying to do.
So even though this is the first that we've heard of you, mm-hmm. last week, really there's been a lot of activity going on behind the scenes in the last 3 years.
Exactly.
That kind of prepared the way.
Yes.
And I was wondering, so now that you're here and you've launched the program, you announced five task force and issues that you're going to be tackling, you know, to get started. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about those five issues and what will be happening going forward on those.
Well, the specifics of what will be happening will be determined by Nevadans for the Common Good, that organization, under the direction of Robert Hu, who will be the lead organizer. So he will sort of determine the course for the organization. But these five issues that we've identified, as I said, came out of the stories that we've come to know over the 3 years.
Let's just note them. It's foreclosures and neighborhood blight, education.
Sex trafficking. Vulnerable elderly.
Right.
Education, immigration, integration.
Immigration, right, okay. So go ahead.
Well, so in those 3 years, as we were building relationships and getting to know the concerns that individuals have, we've been meeting with various organizations to, again, develop a working relationship with them. And again, it's a matter of trying to make sure that you dispel any of the myths that people might have so that people are not afraid of you when you come and say, can we sit down and talk? They know that you are a legitimate concern about the citizens of the city throughout the valley, and that you're here to talk about helping people. And we're not a political organization. We support no political groups. We're nonpartisan. And we want people to know these kinds of things up front. I think in one of the articles, you made a very good point, Patrick, on the enemies point. And it's something that we had to be mindful of early on, that if we want to be a respected and accepted organization, we had to let people know what we were about.
Uh-huh. But I do, let me, let's talk about that. Mm-hmm. In the column that you're referring to, what I said was that you're not just kind of going above the fray here. I mean, you're getting down to the nitty-gritty of these mm-hmm. issues mm-hmm. that are very controversial issues. Mm-hmm. Think about all of the anger over immigration. So. Mm-hmm. And what I had said was, even though your religion tells you you have to love your enemies,
right,
you're going to have political enemies as you try to tackle these issues. So why don't we first tell us about that decision to form, it's a 501c4, right?
And Nevadans for the Common Good
right.
would be a 501c4, which right. will allow them to do lobbying. That is correct.
What was the thinking in that?
As far as being a 501c4?
Yeah, that's, to me, it makes a statement about the type of organization you're going to be. It's, you're not going to just be sitting on the sidelines watching and commenting. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. you're actually going to get pretty deeply involved in the political process.
Right. They may be involved in the political process, but again, they're going to
I understand you're nonpartisan.
Nonpartisan,
that,
correct.
But you're still going to be involved. So, I mean, what drove that decision?
Well, that decision comes from, again, wanting to make sure that you're in a position where you can raise funds to do the job that you mm-hmm. need to do. Mm-hmm. And you want to have those avenues open to you. We are encouraging the interfaith community to really become members of the organization mm-hmm. and be supportive of the organization, make financial commitments to the organization. But you still need a broader base as far as being able to raise funds. And that 501c4 designation allows Nevadans for the Common Good to have that flexibility.
Mm-hmm. And then when you talk about some of these issues that that you know you're kicking off with and establishing task force, I think at least a couple of them, you know, when you talk about the foreclosure crisis or immigration, a lot of people think of those as federal issues, things that the federal government would be the most effective in changing, you know, the status of those. And so how do you tackle those issues locally?
Well, first of all, one of the things that we've done in the Interfaith Sponsoring Committee is that we had a group go to Washington, D.C., and they met with the Nevada congressional delegation. And they talked about all of these issues, the foreclosure issue, the immigration issue, the education issue, and so forth. And
so you plan on lobbying federal officers as well?
We would plan on supporting the legislation that we think would benefit the citizens of uh-huh. Nevada and the Las Vegas Valley. We think there's a lot of merit for the citizens of the Valley when it comes to immigration. We have, 22%, 23% population mm-hmm. In this state of Hispanics. That is something that should not be taken lightly. Mm-hmm. And we know they have issues. We know they have concerns with immigration. But we can be supportive of that community because persons who make up that community are serving this valley very well.
Uh-huh.
And
so let's stop beating around the bush here.
Yeah.
I mean, you favor some sort of comprehensive immigration reform that would allow people here who are currently undocumented to find a way to get to citizenship eventually?
To find a way to get to citizenship, yeah. I think, is the way to go because some of the things that you may hear when it comes to deportations and so forth mm-hmm. and how that should be handled, I don't know from an economic standpoint if that would really be in the best interest of the Las Vegas Valley and the businesses in the Las Vegas Valley.
Okay. You had a lot of enthusiasm and energy at that meeting
yes.
last week. Buses
yes.
filled with church congregants. There was this crowded ballroom. You had an overflow room,
mm-hmm.
this amazing music, and people really, really, there was just a lot of energy in that room. And I'm just wondering, how do you keep that going?
We're going to keep that going through through the congregations. One of the things that we will be identifying in all of the congregations, we've done it to some extent, but we're going to continue to expand it, and that is build a base of leaders within each one of those congregations, where those congregations are going to be advised to take a look at their communities. What are the needs in their communities? How can they be assisting in their communities to make life more viable for their membership and persons who are not members of those institutions to have a better life? Whether it's with, as you heard the story on the neighborhood park that's being misused, and if it's blighted neighborhoods, houses, and so forth, how can they, as a as an organization, come together to get those problems fixed? Vulnerable elderly in a lot of the churches is a concern, and it's one that quietly goes by without focus. But we know, at least from conversations, that there are many elderly who are concerned about safety, who are concerned about trust, and who can I trust? A lot of people have come here, as myself, to retire, but because of circumstances, they may now be single, and the partner's no longer with them. And that brings a whole different ball game to them when it comes to trust and who can I believe in.
They've left family and social networks back east.
That is exactly right. And so they're trying to build networks here, and they do have some new friends. But when it comes to the business decisions and things that affect your income or other areas that you might be concerned with, who can you trust? What stories can you believe when you're told them? And those are things that churches can be a big assistance when it comes to the vulnerable elderly. I had a chance to go to one of the senior citizens centers and talk with the director there. And he shared with me how that camaraderie of building relationships in the centers is outstanding for seniors. But when they go home at night, they're alone again. And who can they trust? Who can they turn to? Who can they make a call? Or who should be calling them to make sure that everything is okay? And those are things that church members, through their institutions, as a organization and a focus group, can make sure their members are comforted. And even those in, this, in the community who are not members of the church can be reached out to for the same reasons.
Well, let me go back for a second. I mean, my question was, you know, how do we... how do you keep that enthusiasm and focus going? I mean, what you're suggesting is that all the people who are on that stage last week, they'll be sort of expected to keep this effort going. I mean, and do you have faith that that will happen? I mean, these are church leaders, leaders of synagogues and temples and nonprofits who are still trying to get through this recession.
I'll take my own church as an example. We had about 60 members attend the meeting. It's up to me as a member of that church to make sure I continue to communicate with the members of my church as to what's going on, as to areas that we can focus on, bring together what we call house meetings, if you will, and sit down and talk about issues, and sit down and talk about how the church can continue to be involved and continue to move forward in spirit on the issues that persons are confronted with within our own congregation and even within our community, which we're right across the street from UNLV. And there is a large community around of very diverse issues. And we as a church need to be aware of those if we're going to be a part of that community. And then we may look at, okay, now how can we reach out in our own community to be a more effective body in helping people with issues?
And now, you know, we've mentioned that you had, you know, more than 1,000 people, maybe 1,300, 1,500 people there, and you got, you know, they registered contact information. They filled out surveys with all kinds of stuff to register sort of their feelings about different things and programs. And so what's next, you know, in terms of tapping into those people that you do have their contact information for? What's going to be expected of them and these next steps in terms of reaching out to them? Are they going to be part of task force? What's going to happen now?
Well, the things that will be coming up over the next really few months, because our director will come on board mid-July, Robert Hu. But we're going to continue with our leaders meeting. We have what we call noon leaders meeting, where we continue to build relationships. We're going to continue to do that. We're going to continue to have the town hall meetings. And in the fall, we're going to do training sessions for the congregation so that new members and persons who have not been a part of this training activity can come in, be trained, and understand what is the full scope and breadth of community organizing. What is it about?
Train them in. What will you train them in?
In how to become effective organizers to deal with issues that they see, that they identify. And then how to work with Robert Hu in making those things come into fruition in terms of solutions. And for instance, again, if you take the sex trafficking issue, we know that sex trafficking occurs right in the neighborhoods, and young girls and boys are being picked up right after school. We know that. That takes a community effort and a community focus, because we've had a number of meetings with Metro to get more insight as to the problem, the magnitude of the problem. But some of these things come about and parents don't even know what's happening. Well, how do you, again, help parents become more aware? And you can do training sessions on those so that parents are more familiar with what they ought to be looking at. What signs should they be looking for to know whether they have a problem or not? And those are the kinds of things that would come up in a training session. But again, it starts with how do you bring members together, organizations together within organizations to say, okay, here's the things that you need to do. Here's what you need to understand about community organizing.
You mentioned Robert Hu, who will be your lead organizer, kind of executive director, if you will, of Nevadans for the Common Good. Tell us about him. Where does he come from? How did you find him? And how will he be received?
Well, I think he'll be received very well. In fact, as I was sitting on the stage and looking out at the audience on Tuesday night, and he was addressing them very briefly, but I noticed that when he said a few words in Spanish, it perked up a few ears, and yeah. I was able to see that. And that just let me know that he's going to, I think, have a very good reception. He comes to us from Los Angeles. He's been involved in Los Angeles as a community organizer. He was not in the lead organizer position, more like a senior organizer over in Los Angeles and a particular community that he had focus on. And in 2010, it may have been 2009. We had a regional meeting here with him, and he was in attendance. We had persons from all over the western part of the United States, from Denver, from Austin, from Phoenix, from Los Angeles, from Oregon, and so forth. And that's where I first met him. And he mentioned one thing in that meeting that was of particular interest to me, and that is, he said, when you build relationships and you're doing an effective job of it, people will seek you out for your support or for your thoughts on how to approach issues. And this was with the city council members in Los Angeles, in his area where his district was located. That rung a bell with me, because when an organization has an effective relationship and council members will reach out to you to ask your thoughts, your
credibility
views.
Yeah.
Right. That makes a big difference. And I think that's what he's going to help us with.
Yeah, there's been a real vacuum, at least from what I can tell, of that here in the Valley.
Mm-hmm.
If a county commissioner or a city councilman has, you know, wants a broader perspective on an issue, they're very often stuck with lobbyists who've been paid by some moneyed interest, or
right.
maybe
exactly.
a labor union, or what have you, and who do they go to, and maybe your group would provide.
Well, we've tried to do that. We've met with some city council members.
What's the reception been?
It was very good. Very open discussions, and they clearly understand, you know, where we're coming from in terms of being nonpartisan, focused on issues and concerns for the citizens of the Valley. But when we develop those relationships, again, it opens doors for us to go in and sit down and talk and have a good discussion, good conversation about what can be done, how can we help make things better, and that's what we want to try to do. We want to try to continue that.
And what about your work in terms of going back to recruiting all the churches? Did you ever have any doubters, people who were like, oh, I've seen interfaith conventions before that never came, nothing came of this, and, you know, what will be different this time? Was there any pushback?
Not really any pushback. The one thing that happened, though, we found that individuals were ready to go and attack issues right off the start. And for some, in this three-year period, that was probably something that was a little bit discouraging.
They were impatient.
Well, I won't say impatient. It was, again, not understanding how community organizing really works and how it's put together. Not understanding the importance of building relationships first. And like the term again, building that credibility. And persons not understanding that, they want to jump on issues right now. But you have to go lay some groundwork, some fundamental groundwork in order to be able to move forward strongly. And people know that you're serious, you're not a threat, you're here for the common good, as we say.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to some of those issues, the five issues that the group was going to take up. How did you decide on those?
From the stories. Mm-hmm. We've had a number of town hall meetings where we have heard individuals tell us about the things that are affecting them. And when you start hearing the same issues come up, mm-hmm. from different parts of the community, like I said, we did one out of university. We did one up at Zion United Methodist. We were over at Christ the King. We were at Trinity. We've done a number of community town hall type meetings where we get together. We always get together, small groups, 10, 11 people, and they talk issues. And we take notes on that. And we take a look at then what we have. And we see the same kind of themes running through. And that's what helped us decide on the areas that we decided on.
And so you're talking about hundreds of people telling these kinds of stories.
Right. In some cases, it might be 50 or 60. Like I said, our first meeting over at university that we ever had was 150.
Yes, right.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how you decided on public education. So people would say, I'm frustrated with my school, and here's why, or my child's school.
Well, not only that, but we see what's happening when it comes to budget. Mm-hmm. And how the budget and education is really being cut. And then when you take a look at these statistics affecting the schools in Las Vegas, Clark County, we spend a pretty good amount of money per student, but we also see that we're at the bottom of the list when it comes to graduation rates, mm-hmm. dropout rates, not good. And then you continue to cut back on the teachers. You continue to reduce the budget for UNLV, and we ought to be doing things to make sure that Nevada has a top-notch education system, because we lose a lot of top talent, they'll leave and will not come back, and that's not good for a city. Mm-hmm. Any city that you go to that has a strong industrial base, you're going to find that the education system is key to having that industrial base. That's one of the things that we're missing here.
Okay, Charles Redman of University United Methodist Church was instrumental in bringing about the new group Nevadans for the Common Good, which is a large interfaith group of churches, synagogues, temples, nonprofits, and schools that will be trying to tackle some pressing social problems here in the Valley. We thank you, Mr. Redman. My co-host is Tovin LePan. Our engineer is Steven Zeller. You've been listening to Neon Eden on KUNV 91.5.